So tonight I wanted to deal with the belief that there are certain ways I am and certain habits I have and certain conditioning I have, and I just can't change that. I have to accept it and go along with that. And we want to look at how true that is or how true that isn't. And in thinking about this class, there were different reasons that I thought it's important for us to talk about that. And I have often thought that we sometimes surrender our consciousness or surrender our beliefs to the idea that it is nearly impossible to control the mind, because that's what Arjuna says in Bhagavad Gita. It seems more difficult than controlling the wind, which means that's nearly impossible, if not impossible. And so sometimes we give into that, or we accept that idea, or we accept the idea that I am a certain way because I've been that way so long, and perhaps I've tried to change, but I have not been successful. So I accept that's the way I am, or this is the way my mind works, or I'm a person who is not very determined or don't have strong willpower and so forth. So I accept that about myself. Not only do I accept it, but it can't even become an identity, as in I'm a lazy person. Of course, that identity then plays out in being a lazy person, which then confirms to yourself that you are a lazy person, which again plays out in lazy acts, and this goes on. And therefore, if you think that way, you can easily become convinced that that's just the way it is and it's the way it's going to be. Of course, in Bhagavatam it says in Age of Kali we're lazy. So that's a given that we're lazy spiritually. But it doesn't mean that we necessarily have to stay that way. And in understanding how Prabhupada spread Krishna consciousness and understanding how Prabhupada taught Krishna consciousness, we see that he asked us to do things which we may feel or may have felt or still feel that are extremely difficult or perhaps impossible. And so we give in to the idea or that we can even do it. But Prabhupada never gave in to that idea, no matter how difficult it was. He always tried to rectify his devotees and put them on the right path and told them to do the right thing and follow the principles as they had agreed to. And so he therefore felt that it was possible. He never felt that it was impossible. Maybe, of course, for a few people, it was just too stubborn or resistant. But for a devotee who was surrendered, submissive to Guru and submissive to Mahaprabhu and Krishna, he never said, okay, this is all you can do. He'd always said, no, you go for it. You go for what you've practiced, what you've agreed to practice, and you do that. So he never backed down, which means that he felt, he understood, he knew, he had faith in that this was possible. So where do we get, where does the problem for us? I think one of the biggest areas is when we confront a certain form of conditioning that is persistent, and then we identify with that and we say, this is who I am, this is how I am. And by doing that, as I was saying earlier, it reinforces the idea that this is my identity. We actually take on another identity. Of course, one of the first things we learn when we study Bhagavad Gita is that our identity is not with the body, neither with the mind, but it's more difficult to disidentify with the mind than the body. So oftentimes we understand, okay, I'm not the body, but we don't disidentify with the mind. And along with identifying with the mind comes kind of sub-identities. Okay, I'm not the body, but I'm stubborn, or I'm lazy, or I'm an intolerant person, or that's just who I am, that's my nature. So that's a more subtle form of identity. So we have maybe not identifying with the gross body. Okay, I'm not a man, I'm not a woman, I'm not old, not young, but I'm intolerant, but I'm stubborn, but I'm angry, I'm lazy, I'm this, I'm that. And so those identities then become ways we act. And therefore, when we come into a situation where we're challenged in that area, we will tend to give into it. And the reason we'll tend to give into it is because we think that's who we are, and therefore that's the only way I can act. Now, we discussed before, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has said that Krishna gives us instructions to act in a certain way. Pravrittim cha, nirvrittim cha. What is proper action? What we should do, and nirvritti, what we shouldn't do. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Krishna would not give the pravritti and the nirvritti unless we had a choice or we had the ability to do it. Because Krishna is saying, you do this, you don't do that. Then why would he ask us to do something and avoid something if we can't do it? So we're giving class here live. So for the live audience and the people who are late, I have to explain. One of the principles we're speaking here is certain standards which Prabhupada has given us, and certain standards are in the Shastra. And then we are asked or we are told, this is the standard, this is what to do. Then we confront the problem where we might say, but I'm not able to do that because it's not my nature, or because my mind is disturbed, or because I can't control my mind, or because I'm too lazy, or I'm not a determined person, or you can list any number of things, right? I'm whatever I am. I'm too old. I'm too young. I can't do it because I'm overweight. I can't do it because the food's too spicy. I can't do it because the food's not spicy enough. You know, there can be any number of reasons, but what happens is, if those reasons have persisted for a very long time, so that's the way we always respond, then we start to take on that identity. I know a devotee who sometimes, when confronting a situation, will say, I can't do that because I'm a lazy person. So this devotee has identified with being lazy, and that's... And when she can't do something, she says, well, I don't think I'm going to be able to do that because I'm a lazy person. So then it's like the identity of being lazy is integrated. It's like, that's who I am. And therefore, my actions will follow what lazy people do. And therefore, I can't change that. It's just the way it is. So there can be any number of ways that we think about ourselves. And as we look at it, we start to see that actually we identify with that. This is how I am. This is who I am. And then we start saying, I can only do this or I can't do that. Which may be true to some degree, but when we come to instructions given in Shastra, and then we say, I can't do that. The point I was making here is, if Krishna didn't think we can do it, he wouldn't ask us to do it. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, this proves the point that when we're confronted or when we're being asked to do something and being asked to avoid something else, we actually have the power within ourselves to make the choices and act in a way to be able to follow it. Otherwise, Krishna wouldn't ask you to do it if he knew you couldn't do it, just like you wouldn't ask your son to do something that's impossible for him or your daughter. It wouldn't make any sense, because when you ask him to do it, say, jump off the roof and land on your head and come back in for breakfast. So you wouldn't ask him to do that. He can't do that, and it wouldn't make sense. But you might ask him to put his clothes away because your room is messy, because you know he can do that. You know, it might be difficult for him. He's not used to doing it, but you know he can do it. So then what we look at is, when we're confronted with a situation where we feel it's going to be difficult or perhaps I can't do it, one of the things we have to look at is, am I looking at the situation from the point of view that reinforces that I can't do it? Like, this is my perception. Oh, this is very difficult, or this is impossible because an old person can't do this, or a young person can't do this, or a lazy person can't do this, or I've never done it. So when you create a perception, then the perception... it gives you a particular vision and a response to the situation. So I was thinking of this story there's this story where the first time Srila Prabhupada was in an airplane, I believe it was 1967, and he was in New York, he started his program, he finally got the temple going, and then some devotees went to San Francisco, and they started a temple there, and so they invited Prabhupada to come, so he flew. So that was the first time he ever flew. And when he came to San Francisco, he said that when he was flying in to the airport, he looked out the window and saw the houses, and he said they looked like matchboxes from that vision. And then he said, and I was just thinking of that. I flew to Rochester on Friday, and I was thinking of that very thing when I was coming in. I was looking at the houses and thinking, Prabhupada said they look like matchboxes. So they actually do at a certain height. They just do. So then Prabhupada said, now just imagine from Krishna's perspective what it looks like when he's looking at the whole universe, how small and insignificant it is. So obviously, when you have a certain perspective, things look a certain way. And if you change your perspective, they look a different way. Like sometimes we'll hear from the sadhu, or even from the non-sadhu, and they give us a different perspective, and we say, oh, I never thought of it that way. That makes sense. That's another way of seeing it. And then you realize you were looking at it one way, and that's why you were acting one way. And somebody gives you another point of view and say, oh, I don't have to do it this way. I could do it this way. Oh, that way I'd be able to do it. So I'll give you an example in my own experience that sometimes we're in a situation and it's very frustrating and we get upset. So that's how we react to it. And often when we get upset, one of the reasons might be, or often is, because we don't know how to react any other way. Because that's the way we always reacted. So we don't think there's another option. It's just when this happens, you get upset. Right? You're like you might look at someone who drives, and when there's traffic, they're always angry. Right? And so for 20 years, they're getting caught in traffic, and they're angry every day. And because for some reason they think when you're in traffic, you're just supposed to be angry. They don't know that you could actually sit there calmly and listen to a tape or relax or just look at the trees, you know. Be a Buddhist and just appreciate, you know. Or pray, you know, if you're a Buddhist, you can pray for the people in the car in front of you. They don't know, it's just frustrated, I have to get to work, you know. No, you could pray for people. Or you could meditate, you could chant. So that they don't have, they only think there's one way to react. So I remember when one devotee, he did something that really upset me tremendously. And my response was that I felt he betrayed me and felt he let me down. And the worst thing that happened was in the project that I was working on, so many problems came from him leaving. So I was living with the fallout from him leaving. So it made it worse. So I was feeling worse because it wasn't just one time. It was like for 5 years. We had to rebuild what fell because he left. So I'm feeling this, you know, like, how could you do this? How could you leave? You're so irresponsible. And now we're left with this burden. And it's like all of a sudden, you know, your altar starts to topple and you have to hold it, you know, and everybody's trying to hold it. And so like the temple was going like kind of crumbling and we're all holding it. And later on I realized that I was so upset for so long because I didn't realize there was any other way to react to that situation. It wasn't conscious. It was just, that was my reaction. And I never thought, well, maybe there's another way to look at the situation. So later on, I understood the situation better. So then I got a new perspective on it. Like, I understood why he did what he did. I understood why he left. So now there's a new perspective. And with a new perspective, there's a different reaction. So I wasn't upset anymore. I said, oh, that's why he did it. Oh, I didn't understand. Another perspective I got even later was that even though I was upset, I didn't have to stay upset, but I thought I did because I didn't know how to not be upset. So I thought, I'm upset because of what he did, and that's all. It's just going to be that way. So it's going to be that way the rest of my life. I'm just going to be upset about what he did for my entire life, because what he did was so bad. And I just accepted that. That's how it's going to be. I didn't think I could change that. I could decide to no longer be upset with him. I didn't think I could do that. I just thought it was like, a wound that didn't heal. And I thought, oh, it's not going to heal. That's just the way it is. So a lot of times what happens to us is we're in a situation and maybe we say, well, I've tried to do this before and I can't do it because I'm tired at night, or because I don't have time, or because. And then we kind of give in to the reality that this is the way it's going to be. And so what happens is we kind of become powerless to correct it. It's like it's just like I've given in to the idea that I can't do anything. I can't improve it. So it's kind of like our willpower, if you saw it like a tire, it's like our willpower just got deflated, all the air is out. So like, I can't do anything, I'm helpless. If we want to execute Krishna consciousness in that mode, that's really the mode of ignorance. Because if you study Bhagavad Gita, what is a symptom of mode of ignorance? It's kind of a helpless state where a person, he could maybe think about doing something, but he can't actually do it. Right? It's like, well, Prabhu, why don't you do this? Well, yeah, I have thought about it for a long time. So, yeah, but takes too much time, it's too much trouble, I'm not that kind of person, I'm not that strong, you know. So you have the identity, and the identity is a confirmation of why you can't do it, so it reinforces it. So it just continues until you realize that you can take a different perspective, a different identity, a different viewpoint, and then you gain more control of your own willpower. Otherwise, you kind of lost it. It's just like, where's your willpower to do this? I don't know, I don't have it. And you find this so often amongst devotees who struggle to do something and fail, and then finally they just give up. Because they're trying to do it the same way. It's like you're trying to nail two pieces of wood together, but the nail is dull. So after a while, you just give it up. It's like, well, there's no such thing as a sharp nail, I guess. Like, there's only dull nails. And so you think, well, it can't be done. All nails are dull. And I've tried it. And all the nails you tried were dull. So you just give up. So often, we too easily give up on something. And just say, I can't do it. And it's a huge, huge mistake, because the point in which you correct yourself, improve yourself, is that point where you take it in your hand to do it, and you decide, okay, I'm going to do this. And then you start to see, well, how it will be possible. I know a lot of times devotees feel they can't do it just because they don't know how. Like, they've tried and they don't know how. Because, like as I say, they're doing it the same way, the same wrong way, so they're getting the same result. So that they give up. So oftentimes we think it's not possible simply because we're doing it the wrong way and we don't know the right way and we don't have the consciousness. So I think it's really interesting when you look at detachment. We have Mahaprabhu saying na dhanam na janam na sundarim. So these are like big attachments. Dhanam, wealth. Janam, pride, followers, sundari, beautiful woman. So these are the obvious obstacles, right? And so we, right from the beginning of Krishna consciousness, say detachment, live simple, be humble, be brahmachari. If you're going to, you can't be a brahmachari, one wife, be chaste. But we learn that. But there's another level of detachment. In this example we're giving, that devotee who feels that she's lazy needs to become detached from that concept. That's a different kind of detachment. She's actually attached to the concept of being lazy because it provides her rationale for lazy actions. So a lot of times, detachment, you know, or like, I can't do this. Well, give up the attachment to the idea that you can't do it. It's actually sometimes can be a strong attachment that I can't do this. That becomes an attachment. And we don't think of detachment in those terms of detaching ourselves from an idea that this is what I'm like or this is what I can or can't do. So there's another level of detachment which can then empower us to overcome some obstacle that we may have thought was extremely difficult. And sometimes we might realize, well, actually, I don't really want to overcome it. So that's why I've never tried to see it in a different way. So if we think about it in a more detached way, a more objective way, we see what we're doing is we're kind of disempowering ourselves. You have this whole concept in Shastra, Krishna Shakti Vina Nahitara Pavartana. You can't spread Krishna consciousness without Krishna's power. You have this whole idea of Kripa coming down, the mercy of the Guru, the mercy of Mahaprabhu, and then you get the power through the mercy. So what we often do is the opposite. The power is in the instruction, the execution of the instruction, and we say, I can't do it. So it's like we disempower ourselves, like the power comes and you turn the switch off. No, no, that won't work for me. I turn this, so then there's no power. And now we're trying to figure out how to overcome a problem, but we've just given up the solution. We've turned it off by thinking, I can't overcome it. So it's an important, at least I find it's an important aspect of Krishna consciousness to understand if there's a problem and we can't overcome it, we require a different way of approaching it and looking at it. There's something we're doing wrong because we keep approaching it in the wrong way. We keep fixing the thing with the wrong nail, so it's not fixed. So and then we hear this from devotees, you know, I've tried, I can't do it, I just can't do it, I don't know what to do, you know. So my realization is, and it's there very clear in Shastra, we always have to be in this realization, this point that I can do something. And if you look at it, Krishna has given us free will. So if somebody gives you free will, now whatever you do, you're responsible for, because you're not a robot. If you're a robot, you're not responsible, right? We hook you up to wires, we press buttons, and you walk around and you say things and you do things. You're not responsible. But when someone gives you free will, that means you're making a choice to do something or not do something. And that means you're responsible. So just the realization that when we're confronted with a situation, the realization that I have a choice to react in a different way than I'm reacting right now. Right? That's some of us, we don't have that. You see, my wife said this, I got mad. You know. See, why did you get mad? Because she said that. Was that the only way to react? Yes. That's not true. There's always a choice. Right? Sometimes we don't realize that we have that choice. As I was saying before. Because we've reacted that way for 20 years. So we think, well, that's how you react. And then we start thinking, that's how everybody reacts. And then we start thinking, well, that's normal. And then we start comparing ourselves to people who are not doing well, because then we don't feel so bad. Well, you know, I have a lot of God brothers, and that's what they do, and, you know, nobody can really do it, and maybe when we're older, and like that, you know. So we've boxed ourselves in, we've disempowered ourselves. And I was telling the devotees the last few weeks, that a lot of devotees feel like, well, it's really Maya strong, or Krishna's making it hard, or whatever. But the reality is, we're the ones that make it hard. Krishna doesn't make it hard. Krishna wants, what did Prabhupada say? Krishna wants us back more than we do. So he wouldn't make it hard. If he wants us back more than we do, why would he make it hard? So if he wants us more back than we do, and we're not going back quick enough, then who made it hard? We did. That's an important realization, because we think, well, if I surrender, then Krishna's going to make it hard on me. No, if you don't surrender, you're making it hard on yourself. That's the reality. But we don't understand that. So one time they asked Prabhupada, what is the greatest obstacle? So you might think, well, Prabhupada would say, the greatest obstacle is pride. You might think he might say, greatest obstacle is sexual desire. Or the greatest obstacle is attachment to wealth and opulence. And Prabhupada didn't say any of those. He said, you are the greatest obstacle. And it's interesting, because Prabhupada in many places talks about how we actually commit a form of spiritual suicide or self-envy by not applying the instructions, because we then work against our self-interest. So he would say sometimes we're envious of ourselves, or we're committing suicide because we have instructions to elevate us and we don't take advantage of them. Of course, we'll have our reasons, which are not really worth anything, but they might make us feel good. So I was talking about detachment, you know, in the mind. So let's say, okay, your wife says something, you're angry, right? And you think, I'm angry because she said something. It's not true. It's not because she said something that you're angry. You're angry because that anger is in you. Now you could do something. Now I'll tell you a funny story. As young devotees, very young Americans who join the temple, when they join the temple, they're not married, so they become brahmachari. So brahmachari in America is a very foreign idea. Men don't grow up thinking, I'll be brahmachari. It's very, very rare. Men grow up in the Western society very, very attached to women, because there's mingling. You know, they're at the school together, and the boyfriend and girlfriend from like 13, 14 years old. So there's a very strong attachment. So these men who grew up in schools, you know, and they had many girlfriends and just friends who were girls, not girlfriends, but, you know, something in your society didn't exist. And so then they become brahmacharis. Very difficult, right? So it was common in those days, if a man saw a woman who he was attracted to, and the attraction had to be physical because there was no intermingling generally, so it was usually a physical attraction, he would say, the woman is lusty. Now, when we look at that example, it's obvious to us that the woman is not lusty, but he's lusty. But he's blaming his lust on the woman. That's so obvious, right? But in our lives, when we react to situations in a particular way, no, it's my wife's fault. She yelled at me, or she did something stupid. But why is it any different? Because that brahmacharini didn't do anything. She just showed up looking beautiful. And you responded that way. So your wife showed up and she said something. And you responded. That's what it is. So when we understand, I'm responding, then we, aha, that means I can respond. There's more than one way to respond. Because if I respond with anger, if it's not really her and it's me, then I can respond in another way. In the pastime, many, many pastimes, if you look at the pastime of Prahlad Maharaj, it's almost inconceivable that his father tries to kill him. That's number one inconceivable. But even more inconceivable is when Lord Nrisimhadev comes, and then he asks to benedict his father. That's a response to the situation, right? He could have said, tear him, send my father to hell for a day of Brahma. He could have said that, right? He tried to kill me, send him to hell. Or let's in his next life, let him be killed, or his next 100 lives, let him be killed, like he tried to kill me. So it was a response to a situation from a different level of consciousness. Right? Now, obviously, most people wouldn't respond that way. But it just shows that's not the only response that one would have. And it shows even a more important point, that he was only responding with what was within him. And what's in him is mercy. What's in him is compassion and kindness and blessing and desire for the welfare of others. So that no matter what happens to him, it doesn't arouse this rajagun, tamagun response, because that's not within him. Whereas most people, if they were in that situation, that's what would be aroused, because it's in them. So you're only arousing, it's only arousing what's in you. But we're trying to say, it's not in me, it's in the person. It's in the arousing person. Well, she said this, I got mad, it's her fault. She shouldn't have said it. And we're trying to deny that the rajagun that got me mad was here. So we're putting it there. And so now, if it's her, you can't correct it. Because the only way it can be corrected is she has to apologize. Of course, she doesn't think she said anything wrong, so she's not going to apologize. So you remain mad. So now you have no control over your anger. You see, so we come to that point. Say, of course I'm angry because she said this. It's her fault. All right, it's her fault. Now you can't do anything. Is that how you want to live your life? You have no power. All your power is in other situations and people. Or a materialist says, I can't be happy unless the bank balance is over this amount. So his happiness is totally reliant on numbers on a bank statement. Right? Those numbers on a bank statement determine his happiness. So who wants to live a life where your happiness is determined by the dollars you get in the bank? Because you don't always have control of that. You may try very hard to get that number and never get it. So then you'll never be happy. And you can... So the idea I was talking about, detachment on that subtle level, is, okay, now I'm angry. But I could become detached from that anger. I could decide, no, okay, I'm going to stop being angry. That's a form of detachment. Now, the thing is that where we get thrown off is, we think, for example, using this example, we think, okay, I'm angry. So we think that anger is like this. It's holding on to me, right? It's like stuck, right? But that it's actually the opposite. It's that we're holding on to it. But we think it's holding on to us because that's how it feels. Like I can't control it. But when you understand you're holding on to it and you can let it go, then you can practice detachment. Then you awaken a power that you didn't realize you had. So I actually have the power to detach myself. Just decide, okay, I'm going to stop being angry. You could actually do that. You could let it go if you're detached enough. And if you're upset, even sometimes your brother or your friends will say, just let it go. From their perspective, they can see you're angry about something, which to them is not important. So from their perspective, they'll just say, let it go. But from your perspective, you won't think you can let it go because you think it came to you from the other person and you're caught in it. So it requires detachment because the anger is a form of gratification. So I have to become detached. Or you can take pride. Pride is a very subtle form of desire, of sense gratification. So I'm feeling proud or I'm desiring pride. But you can detach yourself from that subtle desire. Okay, I'm not going to desire this. I'm going to let that desire go. I'm going to drop it. But a lot of times we think, I can't. And that's where we have the problem. I can't. Okay, now I'm powerless. I can't follow the orders of Krishna. I can't follow the orders of Guru. Is that true? Of course it's not true. I just need another... I need that primary realization that there are other ways to deal with it, and I can do it, and I can stop this feeling. You know, like sometimes we do this all the time. You may have a feeling about anxiety about something, and at a certain point you realize you can't control it, and it's just going the way it's going, and you just drop it. Sometimes it takes years. Like I know, I started a business, and I'd be in anxiety about it all the time. But after a few years, I just saw that there were certain factors I couldn't control, and it's the anxiety went away. But I could have learned to do that the first day. It just took that experience. But ultimately, what I did was I had to drop it. I had to detach myself and say, okay, I'm not in control. Or some way come to grips or an understanding of the situation and say, okay, I'm not in control, just let's drop it. So we have power to do that. We don't realize it, but it's an important understanding not to allow other things or other people to control our consciousness, but rather we control our response to the situation. There's a saying, a bad workman blames his tools. Why couldn't you build this? Because of bad tools. Is that a good reason that you couldn't build? So that is his response, that the tools were bad. Or they say, do you blame your teeth when you bite your tongue? Well, whose fault is it that you bit your tongue? Oh, it's my tooth's fault. It's not my fault. Of course that's not true. But when we don't take responsibility for our own reaction, we can't improve ourselves because it's not our fault. Right? Because after all, we know everyone would react that way. And that's what keeps us stuck in that reaction. But when we decide, well, I don't have to react that way, then we start to analyze or figure out or pray how to do that. And then there's a shift. Because now, if I want to do it, I have to shift to some other way. I have to understand something deeper about self-control, discipline. So it's just nice to meditate on what often happens is our willpower just dies like a dead battery. It's not acting. And so therefore things are acting on us instead of us acting to go forward in the direction we want. We allow the situation to act on us. And then we say, I can't do it, I tried. And then we give up. So sattva-guna determination never breaks. Tamaguna determination never starts. And if you're passionate, then you know you can go either way. You can elevate it or degrade it. So I want to stop here. Does anyone have any questions or answers or shlokas or arguments? Good? Okay. All right, then we'll see everybody next week, and Hare Krishna.